Welcome, Capital Raisers. On today's show, Lee Johnson came on and talked shop with me about scaling abnormally fast, raising equity from retirement accounts, and going from passive to active syndications. Lee was fantastic in the lightning round, rattling off great syndication books, and ended the show with some inspirational words about aspiring to your dreams. If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show, episode 249, and it starts now. Rock and roll. I got Lee Johnson on the Capital Raiser Show. How the heck are you, my friend?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Welcome to the show. Capital Raiser Show season 3, now brought to you by Pitch Decks. More on that as the show unfolds, man. So how did you get into this thing called capital raising and multifamily syndication, Lee?
I got into this by investing my own hard-earned capital into deals. We wanted to purchase a local apartment building near us, but we live in a tier one city, so things are trading in our space at about $250,000 to $300,000 a door. I read that great book by Gene Tobridge that talks about it's a whole different business. And I learned, oh, there's syndications. I can pool my money with others. Then I started looking at deals on Realty Shares, downloaded some PPMs, and made my first investment. So today, that was probably in 2017. Today, I'm up to my 25th syndication that I'm working on right now. So I'm having a good time and continuing to learn and more about it and grow and grow, 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 grow.
Wow, that sounds like skyrocketing acceleration. So are you saying that prior to 2017, you had not invested in multifamily whatsoever? And since then, you've gone full cycle on 10 deals and you're a part of 25 syndications? That seems ridiculously fast and uncommon. Tell me about that. Did you have a background in real estate whatsoever before you got into syndication and being an active sponsor?
I think like most other people, I was into real estate and I was a fix and flipper. When I had returned back to the United States from Singapore, I had a whole bunch of money because one of the best things that a person who's employed can do is they can work at per diem for a couple of years. We did it for 5 years. So we lived in South Africa for a couple of years. We moved over to Singapore. And then we stopped in Seattle, Washington. So we had saved up a tremendous amount of money. And I needed to put that money to work because I met my wife in South Africa. And it's pretty difficult for someone who's educated to be able to work in the United States. So as we were transitioning, we were looking for something that we would do. We looked at buying a franchise, 7-Eleven, a daycare. And all of those things weren't going to work for us. So we then went into flipping. We took a boot camp. We started doing flips. My wife got her real estate agent. We did more flips. But whenever you have a high W-2 position, flips are a really bad thing because not only are flips taxed at your personal income bracket, but if you earn more than $125,000 a year, which we did, you run into where you're now putting yourself in a higher tax bracket and more of that hard work is going to Uncle Sam. So at that point in time, I said, I'm not going to be doing flips anymore. I started moving into multifamily because not only was I looking for a tax deduction, but I was looking for an opportunity to grow wealth at the same time. Multifamily works for all of that at the same time. So I said, multifamily is what it is going to be for me. Once I put my head down to start doing something, I don't look back.
Fascinating. Okay, so tell me about the first few deals. Are you still partnered with the same sponsors that you were in the beginning? Tell me more about this transition, particularly because before the show, you were telling me about tax strategies and going after and raising specifically for people with 401ks and creating a community and explaining to your community about why it might make sense to use some of that money that's just kind of been sitting around from your previous employers. We'll talk a little bit about this, but tell me about the first few syndications and how you scaled to the point where you're at now.
Well, the first few syndications, I didn't know about operators at that point in time. I didn't know how to find operators. Mm-hmm. So what I was doing, it's now defunct, it was Realty Shares. I would download PPMs and I would review them. Realty Shares, there's a reason why it's no longer around. A lot of people who were on that platform really didn't have very good deals. But since I didn't have or know a number of operators, what I was able to do is I was able to download their PPMs. And probably before I moved into my first investment, I had read over 50 to 60 to 75 PPMs. I was reading PPMs so that I could understand the structure. So before I moved into my first deal, which was a $15,000 investment on Realty Shares, I had read a number of PPMs, so I knew what to look for. And I selected the best of the best that I saw at that point in time. But I was going to educate myself by doing, putting my own capital at risk. And at that point in time, Realty Shares was the way that I was going to do it.
So you started by passively investing with crowdfunding agencies. And then at what point did you start raising for your own deals or becoming a full sponsor?
So we invest, of those 25 deals that we have been involved in, 20 of those were as an LP investor.
Okay.
What I like about being an LP investor with a number of different operators is I got to learn what does good look like.
Right.
I learned what good looks like, what bad looks like. I don't want to call out any names, but there's certain operators who I would never invest a dime with ever again. But on the other side of that coin, there are certain operators that I would invest with over and over and over again. But also, I just wanted to get a different feel for who was doing this, who was doing that, who was doing the other, so that I could have a better understanding of it as well.
Were all of those 25 deals multifamily, or was there any self-storage or anything else? They were all multifamily.
When you talk about syndications, there is Core, Core Plus. I haven't really invested in those up until recently. But then you have opportunistic. And I have a great friend who does opportunistic, but it doesn't drive off any cash flow until like 3 or 4 years. That's ground up development. You got to lease up that building. I believe that I can put that capital, that cash flow to work faster than waiting 3 years to receive some money, even though when it comes to opportunistic deals, their IRRs are higher than what you get on value add. But understanding my pedigree was to work as a flipper, I decided that, hey, I would do flips first and then flips moving into value add multifamily just made sense for me. You can take something, you can force the appreciation by doing renovations, you can raise the rents and increase the value of the asset. That just makes sense to me. It might not make sense to someone else, but it definitely makes all the sense to me.
Okay, cool. So tell me about you are an active sponsor on 5 deals. Is that correct? How did you create the partnerships with the people? How did you end up finding them eventually?
Well, my partner, she's a student of Peter Harris. Peter Harris had a video that highlighted her. And since I'm in sales on the professional side, I found a way to get access to her inbox. And from there, we've been working on deals ever since. And at this point in time, working along with her, we're probably north of 2,000 doors at this point in time.
Okay. And then what's your role in the business, out of curiosity?
My role inside of the business is we underwrite the deal with her. We do the tenant audits. We are helping her with the asset management. I just recently returned back from Houston because we wanted to walk over the deals, but definitely all different functions of what we're doing on that deal. And that's one of the reasons why we haven't spread our wings and worked with a whole bunch of different operators. We're working with her as she grows her business. We're doing everything to help her to grow her business.
Does that include the equity raising?
That includes the equity raising as well.
All right. Let's chat a little bit about this. So you mentioned something that's very powerful, because there's like 3 trillion or maybe 300 trillion. I don't even know what the number is. Some absurd number of money that is in designated retirement plans and 401ks that are sitting on the sidelines that somebody else administrates and has control over. This is one of the greatest untapped resources for raising equity. Tell me about when you're having a conversation with somebody that may be interested in multifamily, but doesn't know how to put their 401k to use or some of their retirement plans to use. What kind of conversations are you having with them?
A lot of the folks who I'm talking to are people who have similar backgrounds to me. They are our avatar. His name is Paul. He's a technology professional. He makes about $250,000 a year. His wife is also employed. Their total household income is about $305,000 a year. They have 2 children. They have Paul Jr., who is 10 years old, and they have Emily, who's 8 years old. A lot of those people are just like me, tech professionals who typically move from one job to another job. They don't really stay at a job for more than 3 to 5 years. So those folks who are moving from job to job, they have stranded 401ks. So if a person doesn't have access to a checking account, their own personal checking account, where they can make an investment of $50,000 into a syndication, my job is then to then help them to get creative and figure out a way that they can take control of their life and their retirement and figure it out. One of the ways that I have found that has been very successful is helping others to understand that when you leave an employer, the best thing for you to not do is to roll it over into your new employer's 401k. I say to people, what you should do is you should take control of your life, take control of your retirement, and take access to that money and direct it in the vehicle that you believe is the best suited for you to make, well, to retire as fast as possible. And when you do that with a 401k, you can take that 401k and move it into something called a QRP or EQRP or a self-directed IRA. And I tell people, if you trust yourself, then you can go for something called a checkbook IRA, which means that you get to just either wire a check, a wire funds over, or I like to walk a check into the bank and put it into the syndicator's trust account. But there are options for those who do not have access, ready access to a checking account so that they can participate in a deal. I talk to them about leveraging their past 401ks as an opportunity to come into syndications at the same time. But you don't have to have all your eggs in one basket. When you have a self-directed IRA, you can invest in gold. You can invest in cryptocurrencies. I just believe that one of the best investments is to go into multifamily syndications or some type of syndication, whether that be self-storage, car washes, whatever it is. I think that people should say to themselves, why should I invest in Vanguard or T. Rowe Price, where they charge you enormous fees in order to manage your money? I trust myself more than I trust T. Rowe Price. I trust myself more than I trust Fidelity. And with that being said, I want to take control over my retirement. If the bet that I want to make is on me, not on them. And if you trust yourself enough, I say make that bet on yourself and leverage your 401ks to probably retire in 7 to 10 versus the 30 to 40 that many people are aspiring to today.
Very cool. All right. So tell me about the types of assets that you are investing. What markets, what style are they? A class, B class, C class?
Because I'm looking at value add, that means that it's going to be a product that's probably 25, 30 years old. It's not meeting market rents because it needs some renovations. There's the opportunity. Typically, I'm investing in B minus to C plus asset. And that asset, what we like is we like the Sun Belt region, the southeastern region of the United States. We like that because that's where everybody seems to be moving. Right now, my operating partner, she's in Texas. We have 4 assets that we're working on in Texas right now. And we're doing a hell of a job of renovating the properties, increasing their value, and hopefully interest rates start coming back down, which is going to help with the cap rate so that we can sell these properties in a couple of years and return that capital back to our investors. And we're hoping that we do a great enough job that they would want to stay along for the next iteration of the journey.
So what have you seen in terms of the economic climate this year? Are people kind of holding back? Are they still excited about multifamily? Are they moving in other directions? What's been your experience?
People are a little bit timid, especially right now. If a person doesn't have access to discretionary funds where they can invest in a deal, literally, when they go to look at their 401k, it's probably down 20, 30, 40%. I know over the last couple of days, it's been doing well because inflation number came in at in the 7s versus in the 8s. But people, when they're looking at their 401ks, they're having heartburns. Some people are probably having heart attacks when they're seeing where their 401ks are. So they're probably saying to themselves that we don't want to touch it right now because it's depressed. So I do see people are holding back, but I also know that right now is where there are going to be opportunities because guess what? There are very few deals that can pencil right now. So the deals that you do see available or coming online are those that are truly making sense. Because with the cost of capital being in the sixes and the sevens, it's kind of hard to make a deal pencil out if you're going to put new debt on top of it.
Very cool stuff. Okay, what do you see for the next multiple years? Do you see that you're going to continue to invest in the South region? Are you going to go into the Midwest or anywhere else? You're going to try and lock down a specific market and master it? You're going to stay with your existing partners? Anything like that that you want to discuss?
Right now, we do an analysis twice a year where we look to see where people are going. We use all kinds of data to help us to know where there's going to be demand. And also there has to be an opportunity where there are assets that are underperforming market from a rents perspective. We do that twice a year. So in January and in June, we pull that data up just to see where are people moving, because we want to have that head start so that we can start looking at those MSAs and those submarkets to understand where do we want to invest in next. So we're always doing that. So right now, the southeastern region of the United States, including Texas, have been very good opportunities to play. Atlanta has done very well. The Carolinas have done very well. Florida has done very well. We have a deal that we just penciled in Tennessee, and we have occupancy on that property that's in the high 90s. So we have a lot of deals that have done well, but we don't want to say that we're stuck or we're tied to any particular MSA. We're always looking at MSAs to see which one has the most attractive opportunities, and we'll go and invest there. And we're still investing as an LP in different deals so that we can understand, well, how does it feel to work with this operator? We just did a deal in Indiana, right on the Kentucky-Indiana border. We just invested $75,000 into a deal over there as well. And that asset seems to be performing very well, but it also gives us an opportunity to learn about the operator and are they consistent with their communication to us as investors. And if we like them, we'll eventually try to form a relationship with them as well.
Cool. So let's go back and cover a couple of things that we didn't go into, but you brought up. For example, in the beginning of the conversation, you mentioned that you saw some things that good operators do and some things that bad operators do. What were some of those things?
A bad operator undercommunicates. And if they're undercommunicating in good times, they're only going to be worse communicators in bad times. So now we're starting to see that some deals aren't working as they should, et cetera. We're going to have a lot of operators who are so stressed out with trying to save the property that they're going to forget to communicate with their investors. So I believe that if an operator is very good at communicating, because the deals don't happen without the LP folks, and there's a grand bargain that has been made. I give you a certain amount of money. You give me a certain amount of cash flows and some of the distributions on the upside when the property sells. If you can keep that commitment to me, I'll invest with you all day, every day. But if you're not communicating with me, then I'm lost in the sauce. I'm stuck in the wilderness. I don't know what's going on with the asset. I think that a good operator over-communicates. There's not much when you think about investing in a multifamily syndication. I give you money, you give me a part of the cash flow and proceeds when the property sells. It's quite simple when you think about it.
Yeah, there's some people that talk about investor donators. Like, they might actually be really good operators, but their communication and investor experience is very challenging for the LP because they want to get on the phone with the sponsor, or they want to get into their Syndication Pro portal or one of these portals so they can take a look at what's going on. And if they don't have access to do so and they can't get a response from the team, they start to get very stressed out. And even though they may make money, like 25% IRR, they may not come back because that experience was so bad. So it's not always based on whether or not you're making money, which seems ridiculous to some people, but that is very stressful when you're going through a syndication and you don't have the ability to talk to people. Now, what about the good operators? In addition to communication, anything else that they do that you saw that stands out?
Whenever an operator is over delivering, when you look at the business plan and the business plan and pro forma had certain numbers that they were looking to achieve, and when you can work with an operator who is overachieving because they got even more creative, that tells you a couple of different things. One, they were conservative in their underwriting when they before they got into the deal. So we underwrite every single deal that we're getting into, and we want to make sure that they were conservative in their underwriting. We don't want them to talk about they're going to have 5-6% year over year annual increases in the rents, because that might not be sustainable. So if they can underwrite the deal at a 3-4% increase year over year, and that makes sense for that MSA and submarket, then that's conservative underwriting. So whenever we have a deal that is overdoing on its operations versus the pro forma, we know that that's a good operator that we would want to continue to invest with. People have principles and rules. And when you see that, you know that that's a good operator and you want to continue to work with them.
That is fantastic input for vetting operators. One more question before we jump into the lightning round. You mentioned your avatar, Paul, and exactly where they work or like how much the wife makes, how many kids they have. Where did you learn about avatar creation? And can you tell us how important it is in the syndication process to and the marketing process, better said, to have an avatar established?
Well, we are not only investors, but we are students. So I'm going to give a couple of shout outs to Craig Haskell with the Value Hound. He taught us to put together a pitch deck and also to develop our avatar. Last year, we were working with Julie and Annie over there at Good Egg Investments, and they helped us to develop and fine tune our avatar. And our current coach is Edmund Chun, who's helping us to really figure out our business and how we want to grow our business. So not only are we active investors, but we're also students at the same time, and we're constantly being coached in how to grow our business. We don't know it all, so we're learning from the experience of others as well, and hopefully we can accelerate our speed to success.
That's cool. I did not know that you were being coached by Edmund Chun. He's a great guy. I had him on the show.
He's super. The guy is a brain trust. I jump on the phone with him for an hour, and I get blown away, and I love that. And he actually helps us to believe bigger things that we can do than we even believed in ourselves at first. And that's something that when Annie won our business, I was saying to her, I want to be in a position where I can raise $1 million. And she says, looking at what you've already put in place, I think that you can do $3 million. She sold me on a vision that was bigger than the one that I even had for myself. So I appreciate her for that, and happy to give her a shout out because she's the truth.
Annie gets a lot of shout outs on my show. She's my mentor as well. All right, very cool, man. Let's jump into the lightning round. My first question to you is, what is the best vacation you've ever taken?
We've traveled the world already, so I wouldn't necessarily say that there's a best. When we lived in South Africa, we were in Botswana, we were at Victoria Falls, we went to Cape Town, we did so many different things. When we were in Singapore, we went to KL. Traveling is a part of something that we can do. I would say that the last vacation that we had was, I won President's Club at my job, and I was able to take my wife to Barbados for free. Everything was paid for. It was grand. We had a ball. So any vacation that you can have where it's top shelf and it's all for free, I'll take that one any day, every day. But that's the most recent one that we have. But the other day in the summer, we went up to Kalahari, and lo and behold, I met an investor who I had been chatting with online. She happened to be there. It wasn't coordinated. So I think that that was an awesome vacation. So anytime you can get away and have time with family and friends, that's one of the reasons why we do this as a whole, is to make sure that we're living the life that we want to live versus trading 30 to 40 years. I think if a person follows the strategy that I've implemented for myself and for my family, you can do 7 to 10 years and get out the game. 7 to 10 years, get out the game, build up your net worth, turn yourself into your own family office, invest your proceeds, and you should be able to get a 5 or 6% return and live the lifestyle that you want. Do what you want to do with your day.
Love it. Favorite book of any kind?
The favorite book of any kind, you're going to get me on this one. I'm going to give you multiple names because I'm an avid reader, but the book that always seems to pop up into my mind when it comes to real estate is the Joe Fairless book, The Best Apartment Syndication book. That book is always in my Rolodex. I'm constantly going back to it. What's the purpose of having information if you're not taking action? So James Clear in Atomic Habits is one of the best books that I've ever read to get people motivated. He talks about the 1% improvement and building the habits that you're supposed to have in order to be successful, to push out and do the things that you need to do. So that's a book that's always on the top of my mind. But remember, this whole thing in multifamily syndication would not have been where it is today for me if I had never read It's a Whole Different Business by Gene Tobridge. Kim Lee Sitella talks about how to raise capital legally. Hunter Thompson in his book, and his capital raising book, that taught me how to do this. I can tell you right now, and if you go to chapter 14, it tells you how you can do this thing of raising capital and do it the legal way. So there's all of these different books, and you don't have to read all of them, but all of these books are going to give you some type of nugget, and you can take that nugget and take it to the next level. When it comes to taxes, you got to read Tom Wheelwright and Tax Free Wealth, because what's the sense in making money if you're going to give it all to Uncle Sam? We have to run the government. We have to support our roads and our schools and all of those types of things. But I'm not trying to overpay in taxes. And if you don't follow the right strategies, you will overpay in taxes. Why do you want to do that? So educate yourself on the strategies that you should have in place. Because if you don't have a plan, you plan to fail is something that I've been taught since my youth. And I'm trying to help others to figure it out, because a lot of people don't like to read like I like to read. So, hey, I can help you out and we can figure this out together. We put so much information on our blog, on our website, that it's amazing the amount of information that is out there. We do meetups. We do an in-person meetup. We did one this weekend. We do it on Zoom. We're just in a state where we know that if we give to one, it's going to come back to us tenfold. And that's our model and philosophy.
Awesome.
And if we can do this, anybody can do this. And we just want to let the world know that.
Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Start with yourself, go with family and friends. And then when you build a network, they'll believe in what you believe in, and then they'll come along for the journey.
Beautiful. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
Yeah, you got to replace a limiting belief with a supporting belief.
Awesome. When was the last time you felt like a loser?
Never. I never lose.
Love it.
I either win or I learn.
That's Nelson a great Mandela. Answer. That's fantastic. All right. How about this? Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Nada.
Absolutely nothing. Interesting. Okay. How about this? What do you love best about running and cycling? This is your new hobby.
Well, it's something that I can do by myself. When I get on a bike, I can put my headphones on and I can just go for broke. And all of a sudden, when you're at 20, 25 miles, you can turn back and you can work your way home.
Cool. How about this? Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
I haven't.
And last question, brought to you by Shanna Amigo. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I want to leave the world much better than I found it. I grew up basically in poverty, single parent with six kids, and I didn't have a silver spoon in my mouth, much less a plastic spoon, which I stole from McDonald's. So if I can help my children to start out on step two or three versus the basement or the first floor, that's what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to grow my wealth so that I can leave generational wealth behind to my family and my children.
Fantastic answers on that part of the show. I love the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation, to my company Legacy Acquisitions, and our sponsors, Good Egg Investment, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDex.com. If you want to pay full price for their programs, go direct. But if you'd like to save about $1,000 on their deals, go check them out at thecapitalraisershow.com. Lee, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
Well, we're on LinkedIn. We're Passive REI Pros on LinkedIn and Twitter. But you could always get access to us by using the old phone, 571-444-8474. I repeat, 571-444-8474. But our website is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's valueinvestmentpartners.com. Come with us and you'll be treated like a VIP.
Sweet. All right, cool, man. Before we sign off, I'd love to know, and you can go a little bit longer on this answer if you like, but do you have any words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or multifamily syndicator as they scale on their journey?
Yes. When I was in my youth, when I graduated from college, I did something called Amway. And one of the things that I still remember from that journey is my instructor told us at the point in time that people, when they're in their youth, they have very big dream circles. But as they get older and mature, their dream circles start to deflate because of missed opportunities and scars and things of that sort. I want people to believe in their youthful dreams and continue to aspire to those dreams at the same time. So if I can help people to remember what their dreams are and aspire to them and achieve them, I've done my job.
That's good stuff. My mentor, he likes to talk. His name is Wayne Dyer. And he says, in order to accomplish something, you must expect it of yourself. I remember doing this one presentation at the Mid-Atlantic Multifamily Investing Conference, and I really spent some time on mindset and understanding and believing that it's very hard to become extraordinary when society and the world is telling you that you are ordinary, that you should not take risks, that you should invest in a 401k, don't do anything risky, don't do anything entrepreneurial, go to your 9-to-5, do it over and over. But I think for us as entrepreneurs, we get tired of this whole concept of working for somebody else instead of working for ourselves. And it gets to the point where that's more painful, working for somebody else, than the actual pain of going through the growth that is required of you to become an entrepreneur. So this is a very fascinating topic. I think that commentary that you made is really fantastic, that you want people to expand and grow into their best self where they can attract and continue to go after their dreams. So I really appreciate that comment. Any last things that you want to say on that before we go?
Let me just piggyback on what you said.
Yes.
The 1% needs workers. So since we have been in grade school, they have always trained us to go and work for them. That's why they have set up the 401k in 1974 with the ESRA Act, et cetera. They need workers. They don't want you to trust and believe in yourself. They need workers. I say, educate yourself, figure out the plan, execute the plan. If you fail, fail forward. Learn from your mistakes and continue to grow. If you're going to make a bet on yourself. There's no other person who can bet on yourself but you, or put more on that bet than you. So trust yourself, believe in yourself, and you can grow your business depending on wherever it is that you want to take it.
Boom. Powerful stuff, man. This has been a great show. I really appreciate it, man. You got a lot of insights in there that I think I'm going to be revisiting for multiple years here. This has been great. Man, I really appreciate it.
Call me up, brother.
I will,
dude. Have me back. You know, we're reading a book and learning. And I'm sure tomorrow or next week, we'll have some different information than what we have today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. There's not a lot of people that give their phone number, but the ones that do, they don't get a lot of calls. So I make sure to take advantage of that. And I can reach out on LinkedIn or anywhere else, but when I got somebody's cell phone, dude, I will definitely hit you up, brother, because I look forward to watching your progress and hanging out with you as things unfold.
I tell people, when I get my yacht, I don't want to be on it by myself.
Right?
I want to be on it with family and friends, and we're having a good damn time. So the more friends that I can make along that journey, come on, let's do this together.
That's fantastic. All right, cool, Mal. I really appreciate this. With that, we're going to let you go. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Take care.
The Capital Raiser Show.